next.
Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Welcome to Twin Rivers, a private community. That's how the granite sign reads on the first and largest planned community in New Jersey. Weighing in at 10,000 residents and 700 acres, Twin Rivers is now the backdrop for a legal fight that could redraw the lines between private ownership and democratic accountability. Today, more than one in six Americans lives in a development governed by a homeowners association. And as the number of developments grow, so too do legal disputes. To date, most cases have focused on house color, lawn maintenance, and door decorations. But now a group of Twin River residents are venturing into constitutional territory, challenging the Homeowners Association for its restrictions on lawn signs and demanding that rules of open government apply to its proceedings. The association is fighting back. We're a corporation, they say, not a mini-government. Connection listeners, how much control should community associations have over the lives and lawns of residents? And does private ownership preclude rights to personal and political expression? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-423-TALK. My guests today are Frank Askin, the lawyer representing the plaintiffs, who also heads the Center for Constitutional Litigation at Rutgers University, and Barry Goodman, the lawyer representing the Twin Rivers Homeowners Association. But we'll start with Diane McCarthy, who's one of the plaintiffs in this case, and she joins us from her home in Twin Rivers. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Thank you, Jackie.
Well, I imagine when you bought your home, you found Twin Rivers a very attractive place to live. There must have been some reason you wanted to go there and abide by the rules.
Yes, HOAs have a lot to offer. The pooled resources allow residents to enjoy amenities that they probably wouldn't be able to on their own. But we saw some injustices, and we wanted to do something about it. We approached the board with the matters. We were ignored and ridiculed, so we felt we had to go a step further.
Well, give me some little specifics, Diane. Was there any one day when everything seemed a bit intolerable? Was it one political lawn sign, or was it a sort of a slow collection of things that bugged you?
It was a slow accumulation of incidents that eventually got us so that we formed a group to protest the things that we thought were not right.
Such as what? Political signs?
No, well, the signs were not an issue right away. Actually, I lived here for 17 years, and I saw signs around the community. The only policy on signs was an item in the rule book that said simply no signs. But that was obviously not enforced because for 17 years I saw signs.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 years when I was campaigning for the board, I put up signs. I never got any notice that they were illegal or that it was a violation. But in 1999, when it was obvious that our group was making inroads and getting our message across to the community, there was a resolution prohibiting the exhibition of signs other than just 3 feet from your immediate house.
What else were you asking for? I understand you were asking for access to the community room.
Yes.
Participation in the newsletter published by the Twin Rivers
Homeowners
Association.
Yes, we feel that these are community resources and that we as residents and paying members of the association should have access to these facilities.
And what did the Homeowners Association tell you?
No. They refused the use of the room to us. They demanded a large amount of money up front to be able to use the room. And we just felt that this was an attempt to squelch participation on the part of the residents and to maintain their control of the community.
Did you know what the rules were when you moved in, Diane? I mean, presumably one does. I mean, people elect to live in these places and generally, I would think, probably read whatever diary of bylaws is published.
Mm-hmm. Well, I myself got the rules and regulations at the closing when it's kind of too late to read them. And, of course, that's a problem because most people do more research into buying a vacuum cleaner than they do into buying their most important purchase, which is their home. It is, however, very difficult to get information. Evan McKenzie, in his book Privatopia, recommends that a person looking to buy a home in an association ask questions like, how many people do you sue, how much have the dues gone up, and so forth. But it's very difficult. I remember as a board member not being able to look at insurance policies covering our employees or executive minutes. I mean, the minute you start asking questions, you're a target for ridicule, for harassment, for intimidation, threats of litigation. And I hear this every day. I'm the president of a group called the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition. People call me from everywhere, and it's almost as if they're reading from a script.
I'm sorry, they call you from everywhere around the Twin Rivers development?
No.
Everywhere around the country?
New Jersey, mainly, and Nevada, Florida, California, Virginia, Delaware. I mean, everywhere. These things are problems everywhere.
Okay. People who feel that the community, the homeowners association rules need reform. Let's talk to Barry Goodman. Barry, you're representing the Twin Rivers Homeowners Association. Obviously, you would have a different view of Diane's complaints. But at the same time, do you feel that the homeowners association is acting like a mini government here?
The answer is no, they're not acting like a mini-government. Association has elected board members, certainly, but it's not a mini-government. It's a private organization, not governed by constitutional standards. I listened to Ms. McCarthy, and unfortunately, I have to believe that she just doesn't know some of the rules based upon what she has just said.
Well, what I would like you to do is draw out for me how a homeowners association should work.
How it should work?
Yeah.
Typically, they work. The board members are elected by the owners of the units in the development, which is the way it's done at Twin Rivers. You have 9 board members who are duly elected. Ms. McCarthy and other people have the right to run for the board. The board then makes decisions for the association as to how things in the community should be run with the input of people from the community.
And these are disseminated, published? Can just anyone come to the board meetings?
Absolutely. They're open board meetings. The documents, the minutes of meetings are available to all members of the community. Financial documents are available to members of the community. Budgets and other documents are available to members of the community. The comments, bylaws, et cetera, all available to everybody in the community.
What about votes in the community? Does everyone have an equal vote?
The answer is it depends upon the community. Different associations deal with it in different ways. In Twin Rivers, they have what's known as a weighted vote. It depends upon the size and value of the unit in question. That's the way they decided to have votes at the very beginning when they set up Twin Rivers. And the reason for that was because it was felt that the people who have more valuable, larger homes in Twin Rivers have more of a stake in what happens in Twin Rivers. In this particular lawsuit that's ongoing, there's been some talk about applying constitutional standards to the election in Twin Rivers. And when you deal with constitutional standards, that would be one person, one vote. And in Twin Rivers, there aren't too many people who want that because there are renters there, and some of the homeowners don't want to have renters having an equal vote with the owners in the association. Because the renters shouldn't have the same say in terms of what happens to the community, how money is spent for a pool, for upgrades in the community, et cetera.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's bring in Frank Askin. Now, Mr. Askin, I understand that you are the lawyer for the plaintiffs, but you are also a professor at Rutgers who
is correct.
Is there, first of all, a kind of growing climate of contentiousness, Diane referred to, around the country, not just in Twin Rivers, from residents of planned communities who feel that their constitutional rights are getting trampled on along with the grass?
I'd say absolutely, along with the growing number of private homeowners associations around the country. As the number of associations grow, the number of complaints about governance of these communities grow. I get emails all the time from people who know of my involvement in this lawsuit complaining about their homeowners associations and sending me information about disputes going on in all these places from Arizona and California and Florida and Pennsylvania and Texas. I get lots of emails.
And yet, I don't mean to keep chasing our tails here, but when people enter these communities, I mean, no one is forcing them to. Don't they elect right then and there? Those are the rules. Either you want to live here or you don't. You can vote with your feet.
Well, I think that's a fiction. First of all, I mean, what the associations say is people have waived their rights by buying property in these communities, and they should be aware of these rules and regulations. The first problem is many constitutional rights people can't waive. You can't waive them if you want to waive them. Secondly, if you could waive a constitutional right, it has to be by a knowing and voluntary act. These are take-it-or-leave-it contracts. People go in to buy a house, and they're told, well, okay, you've bought the house, and now you are governed by all these restrictions. As Diane said before, few people even hear of this before they get to the closing. Even then, many people say they weren't even aware of it after the closing, and maybe a week later they got a book of rules and regulations. But in any event, they have no choice. These are take-it-or-leave-it contracts.
Okay, let's go back to Diane. Diane, I just am wondering, what do you think was the greatest surprise as you've lived 17 years, did you say, in Twin Rivers?
17 years before I got involved, and 22 years total.
So you must have been pretty happy most of that time.
Well, I was oblivious, like most people. I would say 90% of the people really pay absolutely no attention to the governance of the community. They're so busy with their everyday lives, and they are perfectly willing to comply with the rules. It's not the problem. You know, Mr. Goodman referred to the fact that I don't understand the rules. I am perfectly knowledgeable about the rules. I'm very willing to paint my door the proper color and put out the garbage on the prescribed day. But I'm not willing to see that when a resident is treated unfairly, there is no recourse. This is a very complex issue, and it's a matter of due process and basic constitutional rights, and if not constitutional, basic fundamental human rights.
Well, how do you feel about putting a political sign? I guess the provision in Twin Rivers is it's supposed to be only 3 feet from the house. You want to see it, what, out by the street?
Surely, where people can see it. I mean, the houses are by and large in horseshoes, cul-de-sacs, and if you put a sign within 3 feet of your home, the only people who will see it will be the ones walking back and forth in your parking lot.
Do you think that constitutional rights are violated in this case?
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously you would think that they do. But Mr. Goodman, I would say that you think that is that elective?
Well, there's no question about it. First of all, signs are permitted throughout the community, not only in the flower beds right next to the house, but in shrubs and flower beds that are out inside the lawns, also in windows in every single unit throughout the entire community. They're highly visible from the road. The roads are not that far. There's not that much grass involved. A decision was made by the board not to allow signs in the grass for several reasons. One is the aesthetics of the community. Two is maintenance of the lawns. One issue that Ms. McCarthy mentioned before, the policy with regard to signs has remained the same, in essence, since 1984. It was not changed to deal with her or any other person in 1999.
Listeners, we're talking about private ownership here and whether or not homeowners associations are constitutionally trespassing on the grass. When we come back, the number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Thank you, Diane, for joining us. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
On Martha's Vineyard.
I'm Jackie Lydon, and this is the Homeowners Association Connection. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking about what the rules should be when a group of people decide they're going to live in a planned community. More and more Americans do, and as they do, more and more of them are finding that some of their private desires, they would argue constitutional desires, are clashing with the by-rules of the Homeowners Association. Frank Askin, you said that you are hearing from people around the country as these kinds of communities become more more part of our daily life. What kinds of complaints are you hearing?
Oh, they're so varied and so many, it is very difficult to categorize any specific thing. I mean, it has to do with funding, about access to information in these communities.
So we're not talking about frivolous. We're not talking about frivolous things like colors of the doors. We're talking about...
Well, Kate, not so much that. No, there. I mean, I've been getting a call for the last 2 days from a woman in Pennsylvania who's complaining that she allegedly violated the no pet rule in her condominium, and they broke into her unit and stole her cats. Now, do I know anything of whether this is true or not, the facts? But she says they just barged into her unit and took her animals out. And she says she has no recourse. But this is just, you know, this is just the last 2 days I've been hearing from her. She wanted to know if I could, you know, refer to her to a lawyer in Pennsylvania, which I was unable to do because I don't know lawyers in Pennsylvania. But there are just so many varieties of complaints, and some of it have to do with signs on the lawns, no access to alternative dispute resolution. If there is a dispute, that they don't have an inexpensive, convenient way of resolving these disputes, which is also one of the issues in Twin Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
If you get fined $50, you think erroneously by the board because you parked someplace wrong or you didn't put your garbage out the right day, and people want to dispute it, there's no easy access to resolve the dispute. And if you don't pay it, then they disfranchise you. You can't vote in the board elections.
Okay,
so people lose their vote.
Let's get back to Twin Rivers. Why does this case, in your judgment, pass constitutional muster?
Well, okay, that's an interesting question, but it's going to require a little bit of constitutional history.
Better be a little bit.
All right. First of all, under the United States Constitution, we probably cannot win. That's why we are suing in New Jersey under the state constitution. Now, I can make an argument that this violates the federal constitution. But in fact, with the current U.S. Supreme Court, I would probably lose that issue 5-4. And that's why we have resorted to the New Jersey Constitution, which gives much broader protections for individuals than the federal constitution does. This is a continuation of litigation my students and I have been involved in over the past 10 years, dealing with rights of individuals against aggregations of private property. My students and I litigated what are called the shopping mall cases in New Jersey. The rights of individuals to go to these private shopping malls, gather petitions, and give out leaflets. We won that case in the New Jersey Supreme Court. Then we handled a case against a residential condominium in Guttenberg, New Jersey, about the rights of an outside group to come into the building and give out political literature responding to the literature being distributed by the Condominium Association in regard to local politics.
Okay, you've given
in
us
each
a
of
pretty,
these instances, the New Jersey court said
here.
The Constitution controlled this.
All right. Barry Goodman, do you see this as a broader constitutional issue?
No, there really is not a broader constitutional issue in this case. The fact is, this is a dispute by three individuals who have been supported by the ACLU, 3 out of 10,000 residents in Twin Rivers. And they don't like Twin Rivers. Certainly, they can run for the board, in front of the board, and get more of the residents to side with them. But they haven't been able to do that because they're such a small minority of the people in Twin Rivers. The fact is, the constitutional issues don't apply in this particular case, whether you're dealing with the sign issue or some of the other document access, some of the other issues that Mr. Askin has just raised. The Constitution's inapplicable, and the fact is, this is a private organization, not a municipality or even akin to a municipality.
Okay.
So the Constitution doesn't apply.
Jackie, can I make one point?
Very quickly.
Twin Rivers has a larger population than 2/3 of the municipalities in New Jersey.
It's 10,000 people, correct?
That's correct. 2/3 of the municipalities in New Jersey have fewer than 10,000 residents. That's why we say this board is a mini-government.
Let's go to the phones. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK makes the homeowners connection. And we're speaking to Israel, who's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hello.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Welcome to the connection, Israel.
Yes. I was saying that when I moved in my neighborhood, I did not know anything about the Homeowners Association. And my question is, does an individual, a private homeowner, has any say in the budget? Because the money, the dues we collect, I don't see what they do for the community. I remember a couple of years ago when we have a snowstorm, we couldn't come out of our neighborhood, you know, and I had thought that, you know, paying those dues should help, you know, should help for the homeowners to help clear the area where you live if they collect those dues from you. I don't see anything they do with the budget. I don't know when they have their meetings. I have not gotten any letter regarding any meetings, so I don't know what they do.
Okay, thank you. And you are a homeowner, Israel, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Frank Askin, what he's saying is that he didn't get access to financial information. That's one of the things that's coming up in your lawsuit, isn't it?
Well, yes, that in New Jersey, there are statutes that do give some minimal protection to homeowners in these situations. The budget has to be adopted at a public meeting. There has to be a notice of when the board is meeting. Budgetary documents are supposed to be automatically accessible to every homeowner. I don't know the law in North Carolina. Maybe there are some statutes that protect homeowners in North Carolina. Or maybe they'd have to resort to the North Carolina Constitution. But I can't speak as to what goes on in North Carolina. But in New Jersey, there are some at least minimal protections. We don't think this board gives out enough information, but they would certainly give out the annual budget and expense reports.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your call, Israel. Let's talk now to Ronald Pearl. He's the president-elect of the Community Association Institute Research Foundation, and this is a group representing the interests of homeowner associations across the country. Mr. Pearl, however you would come down in this particular case, clearly there are ever more disputes involving homeowners associations. I mean, what philosophically are you looking at in terms of trying to balance some of these new demands with the interests of the community?
Well, obviously, you used the key word. It is a balancing process. We estimate that there are around 231,000 associations throughout the country. And with that number of associations and the hundreds or thousands of owners that live within those communities, really the number of complaints as a percentage of the total is very low. There are people that are dissatisfied with their associations, and rightfully so. But there are many, many people that are satisfied. In 1999, we did a Gallup poll. We sponsored a Gallup poll that surveyed residents, owners within homeowners associations and condominium associations. And that revealed a very high level of satisfaction with their associations. And I would say even Ms. McCarthy said that 90% of the residents at Twin Rivers are not interested or motivated to challenge what their association is doing. They're probably very satisfied with the way things are.
Unfortunately, those are not the ones, however, driving the discussion. And for Frank Askin is also saying that he hears ever more. We know from reading media accounts, doing research for the show, that more and more complaints are being brought. My question to you is, how do you strike a balance between being a private corporation and government?
Well, clearly these are private corporations, even though they have government-like functions. I mean, they do collect assessments and they do enforce rules. The laws relating to the governance of associations really do need to be modernized. And we are working in New Jersey to do that right now. We are advocating greater access to ADR, greater access to records.
ADR, sorry?
Alternative dispute resolution. One of the things I think that Mr. Askin and his clients are looking for, the fact that there are disputes within associations that should not end up in the expensive court system is well known and should be addressed.
What about this weighted vote, that if you have a bigger house, you get to have more say than someone who has a condo?
Well, remember that these community associations were established on the basis of property rights. It's very similar to out in the West, they had water districts where the voting in these water districts is weighted based on the amount of property you own. And the theory is that the more property you own and the more valuable your investment, the greater interest you have in decisions involving, say, the investment of funds and other decisions relating to the association. So the fact that there is weighted voting simply reflects the fact that there are greater interests, property interests, in some units than others. And by the way, I don't know Twin Rivers, but they probably pay more in assessments as well.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, at the edge of a housing development like this. It might look like a democracy. You could run the flag up the pole at the edge of the whole community, but really they're not democracies.
Well, they are democracies because the unit owners vote. And they select their leaders. I'm sure that happens in Twin Rivers, as is every other association that I'm aware of. The fact that there's weighted votes does not mean that there is not a popular election of the leadership. And I've seen many associations where there's complacency and an equal number of associations where there are very hotly contested elections, and there are changes in boards all the time. So the democratic process is alive and well in community associations, and I can tell you that I go to meetings three nights or four nights a week to community associations, and they are a model of democracy in action.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Pearl.
Thank you.
Let's go to another phone call, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And Donna, you're calling from Potsdam, New York. Welcome to The Connection.
Hi. I was interested in the comment that people hadn't received notice of these rules when they moved in. I owned a condo in Florida. I was also on the board, for better or worse, for a while. And I was in real estate. And there were laws in Florida about providing these rules within a certain amount of time after someone signed a real estate contract, that they had an opportunity to look at them and even rescind if they didn't want to purchase. And I was wondering, you know, in New Jersey, don't they have similar kinds of rules?
Let's ask Barry Goodman that. Are those kinds of rules in effect if someone buys a house in the Twin Rivers development, Mr. Goodman?
In a new development, there certainly are such rules of 10-day right of rescission. But the typical person who's buying a house in Twin Rivers or anywhere else is either represented by a lawyer or is working with a real estate licensee, a broker, both of whom should be explaining far before the closing what the buyer can expect when they move into a community like Twin Rivers. And so if there's a failing, potentially, it's on the part of the attorney or the broker, if these particular buyers don't know what they're getting into, but certainly they should.
But you said that's a newer development. When we were speaking earlier with Ms. McCarthy, she said she'd been there 17 years. So does that mean people like her maybe didn't get the rules at the time?
I cannot believe that she didn't get the rules. In fact, she said that she did get the rules, and that's something that typically is done as part of the contract. When she got
closing
the rules,
day.
I cannot say. It could very well have happened.
Day.
I heard her say that, and that could very well have happened in her case, and it shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically the real estate broker or the attorney should explain those rules far ahead of time.
Jackie, this is Frank Askin. I might note that I actually live in a gated community. My wife and I are both lawyers. When we bought our unit, at the closing, the seller handed us about 200 pages of documents governing the community. We had not seen them before. Frankly, I've never read them. I occasionally glanced at them on a particular issue, but I certainly did not read those 200 pages before we bought the property. We were interested in buying a convenient, affordable place to live. At the moment, the highest priority on our agenda was not what the rules and regulations were.
Okay.
And frankly, I'm very happy in our community. It's well run. I have no complaints about it.
All right. Thank you for calling, Donna. Let's take another telephone call. The number to call to get on the Homeowners Association Connection is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're talking about whether the bylaws of these associations don't conflict with constitutional rights in some cases as more complaints grow across the nation. We're speaking now to Alan, who's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Thanks for being with us, Alan.
Thank you. I'm the president of a homeowners association, which is a volunteer position. Also, I'm a homeowner in the area, and we sought out a community that had a covenant to protect our interest in the community. So as the president, I'm really surprised when people say we didn't know. Every document we had was available for our review. And to certain people, Israel, who called in earlier about not clearing snow off the roads in our community, and it sounds like our community that he was describing, basically is a state-maintained roads. It's the association is liable if they tear up the roads or do anything like that, so we don't have the ability to actually actually to do that. Excuse me, I'm going to turn off the phone here.
All right.
So my point is this is protecting our interest, and I look at it as caveat emptor. Let you know the lawyers that are speaking. Let the buyer beware.
Alan, how many people live in your homeowners association, in your development?
More than 600.
So it's really a rather small one compared to Twin Rivers.
Right, and actually these homeowners have an option in our bylaws. If the majority want to get together and vote to get rid of the association, they can do that. But I can tell you that I've presented it at meetings that aren't, you know, that a lot of people don't participate. But at these meetings, I said, you know, do you want to get rid of the association? And they feel that these associations are protecting their interest in this investment in this real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority don't. There's just a select few who want to opt out. And they're the people who wanted the house so bad that they looked beyond the actual contract.
Okay. And just one last question before we let you go. And how old is the association?
This association dates back to 1993.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in. Frank Askin, you just heard Alan talking about his association. Do you find a difference between those that are smaller and newer and those like Twin Rivers, which publish their own newspaper, which have their own swimming pool, have parks, 10,000 people? That's twice as big as the town I grew up in. Is there a difference?
I think there probably is. These larger communities where people are sort of the leadership, the officers are faceless. You don't know them any better than you may know the mayor of your town. I think it's more likely to run into serious disagreements. The smaller communities probably operate a little bit more on a neighbor-to-neighbor basis.
Okay.
Without quite as many disputes.
All right. Thank you. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Lydon, sitting in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, and we're talking about homeowners associations in this hour of the show, and whether or not, as these associations grow, one in six Americans now lives in a planned development, their bylaws don't suspend the rules of constitutional gravity. In other words, do the private interests of the owners clash with the rules of the community? Can people put up flags? Can they put up political signs? Can they express themselves in free speech, as the Constitution says? Lauren is calling from Boston. The number to call to get in, by the way, 1-800-423-8255. Hello, Lauren.
Hi, I am a homeowner in a condominium complex of about 120 units in Boston, and I am interested if your guests have any suggestions in increasing democratic participation for non-board members. We have a board of six members to represent our association, and there are a lot of residents in our complex who are interested in participating in the decisions that the board makes, but we are not informed, for example, when their meetings are or the issues that they're discussing. So I'm wondering if there are any suggestions for that.
Frank Askin, put that question to you.
Well,
obviously, you'd like these things not to be resolved just with lawsuits, but something.
Well, first of all, I'd take a look at state law in Massachusetts to see if there are any constraints on the management of these homeowners associations. Certainly in New Jersey, there is a Condominium Act which requires that public notice be given of all board meetings, that no official actions can be taken except at a public meeting. So there should be full notification. I assume there must be something similar in Massachusetts. In addition to which, the Massachusetts Constitution is not too far different from New Jersey's, and there might be some constitutional rights under the Massachusetts Constitution if there are no statutory rights.
Lauren, does that answer your question?
Yes, I'll definitely check on that. Thank you very much.
Let's take another call. The Homeowners Connection is at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're speaking with Deborah, who's calling from Williamsburg, Virginia. Hello, Deborah.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
My question is, I'm really surprised. I am a real estate title examiner. I examine the records of public record that are filed in the courthouses concerning plan developments. And I'm really surprised, you know, it's open to the public. I mean, I do not know a jurisdiction in this country that does not allow documents to be viewed.
Do you think that people just
aren't recorded in the courts? I mean, why are people so surprised? They go into a gated community. The roads are not public. Somebody's got to maintain these roads. Why is everybody so surprised that this homeowners association is saying, okay, you can't paint your house green, you can't paint it pink? You know, it's in our bylaws.
Barry Goodman, are people just not reading the rules before they enter these communities?
Well, whether or not they read the rules, I think this is really a red herring. The fact is people move into these communities because they want the uniformity. They pretty much know exactly what they're getting. People don't want to have to battle to keep up with the Joneses in terms of the look of the neighborhood. They don't want to live next to somebody who's going to paint the house red or yellow or shocking pink. They want to maintain the aesthetics of the community. They pretty much know what they're getting into when they move into these communities. Do they know every nuance? Have they read all the documents? Probably not. But the fact is they pretty much know what they're getting into, and they move into these communities because that's exactly what they want. They want the amenities, the aesthetics, the uniformity that these communities provide for them.
But if everyone knew what they were getting, there wouldn't be the numbers of complaints that we seem to be getting from around the country.
Well, the fact is that most of these people do know what they're getting into, and then they have individual problems with their particular homeowners association.
Okay, let me put this question to Frank Gaskin. Do most people know what they're getting?
I believe not. In Mercer County, New Jersey, over half of all new homes being built now are part of a homeowners association. If people want to live in that area, it's very difficult to find affordable housing that is not governed by a homeowners association. And the first desire of everybody is to find a place to live which is convenient and is affordable. The secondary considerations are, what are the rules and regulations? Most people don't have that at the top of their agenda when they buy into these communities.
Okay, let's go back to Deborah. Hope you can hear me, Deborah. I'm curious, when you say that as a real estate examiner, you think that people shouldn't be surprised that a gated community has rules, I don't think we're talking here about what color to paint the door or whether or not you leave trash out or how well you mow the lawn. I think that is why people who like a regulated life go to these places. Some of the complaints that have been coming from around the country have centered around things like, can I display a flag as a curtain, as a veterans memorial in my house? The case in New Jersey revolves around putting political signs for people running for office further than 3 feet away from the house. These kinds of things that have to do with what we take for granted, I think. We take for granted that we have constitutional rights as Americans.
Oh, well, I mean, I can see people's complaints, but, you know, the thing about it is, it's in the bylaws. You know, if they don't want to abide by them, they can move someplace else.
It's in the bylaws that you can't put a political sign?
Or signs. I've read these documents time and time again. Don't really, I mean, they're thick. I mean, 200, 300, 400, 500 pages.
Okay,
most people are not going to read them. But then I'm surprised that they say, oh, well, I didn't know about this.
Uh-huh. So your view would be that if something like putting a political sign 3 feet away from the house, if you can't live with that, don't move there.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Deborah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's take another call. This is the Homeowners Connection, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. What should we be asking for communities who have planned developments and bylaws that some members later say interfere with their rights to free expression? We're speaking with Greg. He's calling from Seven Lakes, North Carolina. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thanks. I publish a small community newspaper that serves two gated communities in Piedmont, North Carolina, and there are a half dozen different homeowners associations of various sizes and various stages of development. And what we've seen over the past 6 years in working in the community is that those homeowners associations have moved towards more and more openness, more information being put out, establishing websites, increasing the democracy involved in their processes, and they've done that to great benefit. So whether they're constitutionally required to or not, it would certainly behoove the people who run these organizations to move in the direction of greater democracy, greater interface with their members.
Frank Askin, what do you think about that comment? I don't know how old exactly planned developments have been around since World War II, but they seem to have really increased in the last decade, have they not?
And absolutely. They're increasing geometrically.
Uh-huh. And as they do you think that there's a turning point in terms of how they regulate themselves?
Well, I think the turning point will become when the legislature and or the courts step in and to require more democratic procedures. As long as you leave it to the, to the officials themselves, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. We know that. There has to be some kind of neutral oversight over the operation of these communities. They can't be operated as despotic communities, which some are. I mean, Mr. Pearl before referred to these communities as being operated democratically. In Twin Rivers, I think the political science term would be an oligarchy. In order for people to change their rules, they vote by the value of their property.
Okay,
you would have to get two-thirds of the property values to vote to change a rule in Twin Rivers.
Greg, before we say goodbye to you, I'd like to know what you say that it would be a good thing you have moved to more democracy. Can you give us a specific example of what's worked in your area?
Yes, I think the one of our landowners associations about 12 months ago opened its monthly work sessions, which used to be reserved for board members only, to the press and to the public. And prior to that, there was a great deal of suspicion about board actions and the secrecy that attended to them. And now I think the board is perceived as much more open to the community and much more responsive to its concerns. So that's just one example of what can be done. And I should say also that in addition to legal pressure, the pressure that can be brought to bear by a good independent newspaper can certainly move associations in the right direction.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. Let's take another one, 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK makes the Homeowners Connection. And we're speaking now with Bob. Hi, you're calling from Bettendorf, Iowa, right?
Yes. The disturbing thing to me is that there are so many people and an increasing number of people who want so much uniformity.
You mean that the reason they're moving there is they want to live in a community in which they know what they're getting, in which everything is like everything else? What do you mean by uniformity?
Well, everybody, there are limits on how you can paint your house. You probably can't have a dog house. You probably can't have a motorhome in your yard. Heaven forbid that somebody would want to work in his car in his driveway. I mean, why do people have to have so much uniformity?
Good question.
That's disturbing to me.
Let's ask that to Barry Goodman, who is the lawyer representing the Twin Rivers Homeowners Association. Why do so many people like these communities? Certainly they have increased in popularity.
Well, I think they create a certain amount of certainty for people when they move into them. They know what they're getting. Much of what they would normally have to take care of if they own their own home, lawns and such, are taken care of for them. A lot of decisions are made for them that they don't have to deal with on an everyday basis. I think that's the reason why people like these types of communities. Plus, the pooled resources to have recreation facilities such as swimming pools and such also is a positive thing for people. And people don't want to have to keep up with the Joneses anymore. People want to be able to live their lives and not have to worry about those types of issues.
Frank Askin, as these planned developments grow across America, how are they changing the relationship to municipal governments locally? I mean, if they're not in any governments, as Barry Goodman would contend, there is a government nearby, the town or townships that they're a part of. What's the relationship there?
Well, that's very complicated. But, of course, people living in these communities are basically subject to two governments. The people in Twin Rivers are subject not only to the rules and regulations of East Windsor, most of which apply, they're also subject to the rules and regulations of Twin Rivers. Sometimes they're in conflict. For example, in East Windsor, you can put up a political sign on your lawn 45 days before an election. You cross the road into those streets controlled by the Twin Rivers Homeowners Association. They say you can't put up a political sign on your lawn. So there are differences. Now, there's also, you know, in New Jersey, there's also something called the Condominium Services Act, which actually requires municipalities to pay some of the costs of street lighting, of street repair, snow removal in these communities.
Let me
so
ask
some
you,
of it actually.
Let me ask you, Frank Askin, do you think that some of these cases might one day wind up in the Supreme Court, since at least plaintiffs would say that they do involve constitutional
rights? Well, certainly this one is going to wind up in the New Jersey Supreme Court, which I anticipate we're going to win most of the issues we've raised. And one of these days they may also wind up in the United States Supreme Court when there is a change in the personnel of the United States Supreme Court. If we went back 50 years to the Company Town case of Marsh versus Alabama, I could easily win this case in the United States Supreme Court. The problem is the Rehnquist Court probably no longer subscribes to the case of Marsh versus Alabama, the Company Town case from 1950.
Jackie, if I may, you know, with regard to, there's one thing that's been missing here in the discussion, and that is when you deal with lawns and common areas in an association such as Twin Rivers, you're dealing with the collective will, collective decision-making process by the members of the association. They make a decision not to allow signs on the lawn, et cetera. And you know what? East Windsor can decide that they want to allow individuals, private individuals, to have signs on their lawns if they want to. Here we have a collective decision not to allow that. That's their right to do that. And, you know, if that's, I think that that's really an important
distinction. By the way, Jackie, that's incorrect, if I might get a word in on this. The people of East Windsor could not collectively decide to forbid political signs on anybody's lawn. As long as one individual in East Windsor wants to put a political sign on their lawn, that's their constitutional right.
Well, it's a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction, and individuals in East Windsor absolutely have the right not to put signs on their lawns. There's no question about
Gentlemen,
that.
You know, I wish you both good luck in court, and you're going to have to continue this discussion there, and I do think that many, many Americans will be watching. Thanks very much to my guest. Frank Askin is director of the Center for Constitutional Litigation at Rutgers Law School. Barry Goodman is an attorney with Greenbaum, Rose Smith in Woodbridge, New Jersey. And earlier we spoke with Diane McCarthy, one of the plaintiffs in the case, and Ronald Pearl, president-elect of the Community Association Institute Research Foundation. You can continue this conversation online at our website, theconnection.org. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, and Tara Murphy. Graham Smith is our senior producer. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection on NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is W.